at least once a year, I like to bring in some of my Kevin's famous chili. The trick is to undercook the onions. Everybody is going to get to know each other in the pot. I'm serious about this stuff. I'm up the night before, pressing garlic and dicing whole tomatoes. I toast my own ancho chilies. It's a recipe passed down from Malone's for generations. It's probably the thing I do best.
Good morning, Hope. It's great to be with you. My name is Danny Householder. I'm a pastor at our campus up in Ames, and I want to say hi to all of our local sites who are joining us today. And I also really want to make sure that I say hi to Hope Ames. They are live streaming today. We usually do live preaching there, but today we're live streaming. I love you, I miss you, and I will see you soon. Oh, it's good for my soul just to communicate with them. But coming into this space also feels special for me. I grew up in this church. A lot of you grew up in this church. I like to say the only difference is I didn't have a choice. My dad is Pastor Mike, and he's a great guy, and he's really awesome and faithful at what he does. But I love this church, and it's really an honor to be back here at this campus today to experience some sort of a homecoming, if you will. And homecomings are parties, and that's what we're talking about in this series. It's called There's No Party Like a Jesus Party. This is week four of There's No Party Like a Jesus Party. Jesus is always talking about parties. He's always partying. He's always partying with all sorts of people. But who do you think the Son of God is going to spend his time with when he's partying? It might surprise you. I mean, parties are absolute messes, aren't they? And it's not just because Kevin on The Office is a mess, but it's also true in Jesus' life. Seriously, you heard it in the Bible reading from today in Luke chapter 15 when Jesus talks about a party that takes place. At the beginning of that, Jesus is telling that story to a bunch of messy people. Tax collectors and other notorious sinners often came to listen to Jesus teach. If you think Kevin from The Office is messy, these people are the true messes of their society. The tax collectors, the notorious sinners, and other people who were religious were totally appalled that Jesus partied and spent time and associated with messy people like this. In fact, it tells us that the Pharisees saw this and it made them complain that he was associating with such sinful people, even eating with them. Now, in these days, we know that eating meals with people is a big deal. Go back to middle school, if you will, for just a moment. Do you remember walking through the cafeteria? It was like Survivor on a daily basis. You're wondering, who's going to hold my social life for the next 30 minutes? And it's stressful because you know whoever you're sitting with, you're going to be stamped with association with those people for the rest of the school year so long you keep sitting by them. And Jesus had a community where they associated you with the people that you ate with. This went all the way back to the Old Testament. When you look at the Old Testament and the stories about close relationships, the close relationships were sealed by meals. In every single story in the Old Testament, when someone comes up with a covenant with someone else, they would eat together. There's this messy family drama that's taking place, and there's these two characters named Jacob and Laban. Maybe you've heard of them before. Long story short, they're at odds with one another, but then they decide that they're going to move forward with each other's best interest in mind. And the way that they're going to seal that covenant, the way that they're going to trust each other and accept each other and move forward with each other's best interests in mind is they eat together. It says that so Jacob took an oath. He offered a sacrifice there in the hill country, and he invited his relative Laban to a meal. When Jesus is eating with messy people, he's allowing anybody who's willing to listen that they can stamp him with association to these messy people like the tax collectors and the notorious sinners. And of course, that was appalling to the Pharisees. It was appalling to the Pharisees because Jesus was starting to become the face of their religion in this community. And God doesn't hang out with messy people, so they thought. But Jesus is proving a point to them. Yes, he does, because I do. And so if you're going to follow Jesus, you're going to follow Jesus into rooms with messy people, with people who cause you annoyances, with people who are a burden to you, with messes, with messed up people, with lost people, with broken people. If you're going to follow Jesus, that's where you're going to show up. But also know this, if you're going to associate with Jesus and he's associating with you, it also means you're messy. It's just the truth about it. We are messy people, but the cool thing is that Jesus loves messy people. He loves associating with messy people. He loves being with them. He has their best interests in mind. And we know this because when Jesus wanted to prove a point, he told a story. When Jesus would prove a point, he would tell a parable. Have you heard of this before? A parable is a story that proves a point. When Jesus most often wanted to prove a point, he told one parable. But in Luke chapter 15, he tells three parables to prove one point. So you know that this really matters to him. So in Luke chapter 15, he starts off with this story. It's incredibly famous. If a man has 100 sheep and one of them gets lost, what will he do? Won't he leave the 99 others in the wilderness and go to search for the one that is lost until he finds it? Now, I think that sometimes today it's pretty easy as Christians to say, well, Jesus is our leader. He's our God. So everything that he says is so poetic. And of course he's telling the truth. And of course it makes sense to me because I'm a Christian and I have to think that what Jesus says makes sense all the time. But imagine you're hearing this and no one has ever spoken these words before. And you hear Jesus say to a group of people, and in this group of people, there's probably shepherds. And he's telling them, this one shepherd has 99 perfectly fine sheep, and then there's one headache of a sheep who causes a problem and creates a mess and gets lost. And of course, the shepherd would leave those 99 sheep for that headache of a sheep. You're listening to this and you're thinking, that's not super wise, I don't think. But Jesus pushes the point even further. He tells a second story. He says, okay, so suppose that a woman loses one coin. Won't she light a lamp and sweep the entire house and search carefully until she finds it? And you're hearing this, you're like, what? I mean, if she turns over the entire house and she finds the one coin, she's going to have to spend multiple coins so that someone can come in and fix the mess that she made. This isn't economical, Jesus. This makes no sense. And that's kind of the point. It's true. God's love is not economical. But God's love is extravagant. Jesus is proving that by hanging out with messy people, by hanging out with people who are as hopelessly lost as sheep, who are as hopelessly lost as coins. Have you ever felt as hopelessly lost as a sheep or a coin? How do sheep and coins get lost? Sheep get lost on their own feet. They get lost by going off on their own, by wandering. But they're not really meaning to do it. They're just chasing grass. They're eating. They're not looking up. They're eating. They're not looking up. They're eating. They're not looking up. Finally, one day, they look around them and, I was in like 20 manger scenes growing up as a pastor's kid. Right here, I've got the sheep impersonation down. And maybe that's you. Maybe you feel like you're lost in the way that a sheep gets lost. You're not totally sure how it happened. You know that you're responsible, but it just feels wrong. And then maybe in other ways you feel like the lost coin. And the lost coin that has no autonomy, has no agency. The lost coin that's just picked up, used, and spent, and then left somewhere and forgotten. Do you feel like that ever? Do you ever feel lost because it feels like someone's used you, spent you, and forgotten you? Jesus is making it clear to us he never forgets us. The world may forget you. The world may lose you. You may lose yourself, but he doesn't lose you. He doesn't forget you. He loves the messy people, and he's even telling us all of heaven is like this. Heaven is so invested in messy people because he tells us this in Luke chapter 15, verse 7. He says, in the same way, there's more joy in heaven over one lost sinner who repents and returns to God than over 99 others who are righteous and haven't strayed away. Up in Ames, we have this college ministry called Kairos. And at Kairos, we have several students who are part of the teams up there, and they perform and they compete in front of tens of thousands of people. They experience something most of us will never experience. The applause, the roar of tens of thousands of people when you do something good. And of course, they also probably experience the nightmare for most of us, which is the booing of tens of thousands of people. But maybe you think to yourself, like, oh man, if only people would notice me, if only they'd see me, if only they'd cheer me on, then I feel like I matter. But what Jesus is saying right here is you may not have stadiums full of people cheering for you, but you have all of heaven partying over you. The angels, the saints, they're partying over you, according to Jesus. This is at the center of our faith, a party for messy people. It's at the center of who we are. And if this is at the center of who we are, why is it so often that Christians are the most annoyed at parties? Do you ever feel like you're this lady at parties? You remember Debbie Downer from SNL? I tried to find a clip. I tried to find a quote that would work, but they're just so down and depressing. It wasn't appropriate for church. It just wasn't. Debbie Downer, she's at parties, she's at Disney World, she's at these fun places, and she just goes, womp, womp. Doesn't that kind of feel like cultural Christianity these days sometimes? We see people partying, we see people having a good time, and Romans chapter 12 tells us, weep with those who are mourning. And of course, sometimes it's easy to weep with those who are mourning, because if you have half a heart, you feel bad for people who are hurting. But it also tells you this, rejoice with those who are rejoicing. And rejoicing with those who are rejoicing is sometimes a lot harder. We see people who are partying, and rather than cheering them on, we judge them. We look at their parties, and we say, big party you got there. Bet you spent some money at that. Couldn't you have bought a Bible study with that? Well, yeah, but nobody wants to have Bible studies with cranks. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not a party. And parties sometimes bother us. They stress us out. They mess us up a little bit because parties can be annoying. But parties are only annoying. Parties are only messy. Parties are only stressful because people, again, are messy. And the people who show up to parties, they bring their messes. In the same way that we bring our mess into this space every single week. But that's okay because Jesus loves the mess. He loves you and he shows up in your mess. And Jesus loves people who find themselves in a mess. It doesn't discount you from the kingdom of heaven. He fully welcomes you with your mess and all. My wife and I, we're pretty different when it comes to parties. We compliment each other. She's amazing. She really challenges me and stretches me. Her name's Abby. And Abby and I, sometimes we have some differences, right? Like, my idea of a great night and a fun night is staying in and watching a movie. And that's the same thing for her as long as 20 of our friends come, too. You know what I mean? Some of you know what this is like, right? And so when we're planning for parties, it's very different. Abby thrives at planning parties. I get stressed at planning parties. When Abby's planning for people to come over to our house, she's thinking about every detail. She wants people to feel warm. She wants people to feel like our house is their home. So she arranges the furniture in a way that it's set up for conversation. She puts scents in the diffuser that will smell nice. She puts tone-setting music on so that people can feel relaxed. When I have people over to our house and I'm planning for it, I want them to know that the house is sterile. Plain and simple. I want you to know that if you drop food on the floor, you could eat it right there. And there's nothing wrong with sterile, but that's like saying, hey, let's have game night at the Apple Store. And if you mess up the Apple Store, you're going to pay a lot of money. Nothing wrong with sterile, but it's not a party. And for Christians, we are supposed to be party people. So are we representing Christianity like that? Or sometimes are we representing Christianity as sometimes a bunch of cranks who criticize the parties, who judge the parties, who look down our noses at people who are finding themselves in a mess, forgetting that we find ourselves in the same mess? I probably don't have to convince you that people are messy, right? You could just look in a mirror. And if that's too hard for you, just look at the person next to you that you came to church with today. They're looking at you. They think the same thing. We're all messy. Maybe for you, you're sitting here like, oh, my family, we're such a mess. When I thought about what our family would be like, it wasn't like this. That's true for all of us. All of us in one way or another have this. My family, for sure, I love my family. We're close. My parents are the most amazing parents. Like, sometimes people make all sorts of assumptions about pastors' families. One thing that you have right about our family is my parents pretty much are perfect. It's pretty annoying. It's difficult. My mom is insanely kind. She's insanely joyful. She's just awesome. My dad is ridiculously gracious and forgiving. Again, it's kind of annoying. They're so perfect. My sister picked that up. She's perfect. I said that at the 8 because she was here. Now I feel like I have to say it at the 9:30. But really, she's great. My brother and I, like, we're very, very close, but we're messy. You know what I mean? Like, we're messy. And I have to think, like, what did our parents dream for us, right? What would their sons be like when they got into their 30s? I imagine a lot of dads would think, you know, with my sons, I'm going to go out and we're going to play golf together. My brother and I, we hate golf. We're not good at it. I don't golf. It's just not a good thing. I'm saving you a really stressful afternoon by not golfing with you. Instead, my brother and I, we're in our 30s and we still love to go-kart. Like, we love go-karting. So much that on my wedding day, my groomsman and I, we went out to go-kart. But my brother, because he's so competitive with me, he did not let me win on our wedding. Instead, he stood at the top of the podium. He took a trophy that was the size of his own body and he held it up for a picture that's still hanging up at the go-kart track today. On my wedding day, right? Come on, man. I tell you what, it's something that we can't let go of. And even when our family gets into these, you know, holy and important places where we're going to reflect and it's going to be special, we're still a mess. We went to family camp a few weeks ago at Okoboji Lutheran Bible Camp. It's the most amazing place, and we recommend it all the time around here. But seriously, check out Okoboji Lutheran Bible Camp. It's amazing. We went to family camp there, and when you go to family camp, you get a few counselors. You get a counselor for each family, so our family, multiple families now. We had a few counselors, and one of them was named Malachi, and I found out he's going to Iowa State, and I'm really excited. I'm like, oh, that's perfect. You can be a part of Kairos. And he's like, I'm a drummer. I'm like, oh, that's perfect. You can be in the band. We're so excited about you, Malachi. This is going to be awesome. And then sure enough, there's family free day, and we go to Arnold's Park because we've got all these little kids in our family now, and Arnold's Park is this amusement park out there, and they've got all these fun little rides for the little kids. But then my brother and I remember, there's a go-kart track. Now, it's pretty underwhelming. My dad took a video and he showed it to us afterward, and I actually thought it was in slow motion. That's actually the real speed of these go-karts. They cost like $5. And I imagine on family free day at family camp, my dad would think, you know, someday I'm going to go and golf with my sons and we're going to talk about the U.S. Open. Nope, he's standing on a bridge at Arnold's Park watching his mid-30s sons race around a child's track. We're standing in line. I'm telling Malachi, hey, dude, this is just, it's relaxed. It's just fun. You know what I mean? We're just going to have a good time. Don't worry about it. We get on the track, and you would know that I grew up idolizing Jeff Gordon. There is no difference between me and him on that track. I am the Rainbow Warrior, and no one will beat me, especially my big brother, especially him. So, of course, we're bumping. We're rubbing throughout the entire race. There's a few other people who are rubbing and bumping throughout the race, too. And afterward, John and I, we should really get over it. It's $5 go-karts. But we start arguing with each other about who really won because I started behind him. I passed more cars, but I never got past him. I'm still not over it. Can you tell? It's a problem. Meanwhile, one of the other people that we bumped into, he's mad at us. We say, hey, get out of here. We're not talking to you. They walk away. Malachi walks up. I'm like, hey, Malachi. He goes, I would fight for this family. You want me to go find that guy? I'm like, oh, no. I'm a mess. I create messes. I mean, my goodness, like, what is it? You know, you dream that your life would be a certain way, and maybe it's just messy. Yeah, because we're people. Because we're messy people. But Jesus gets close to the mess, so close to the mess, closer than you might think to the mess. You might think your family's a mess, but do you know this? Jesus' family was a mess. No, seriously, the Son of God, God in the flesh, walks into this world, and he is a part of a family that's a mess. We hear about the people in Jesus' family, Mary, James, Joseph, Judas, Simon. Maybe you pick out the name James there. James is credited with writing the book of James in the New Testament. You're like, well, of course, this is a great hero of the faith. But no, in those days, these were nobodies from a nowhere town. They were messy people. Not only were they messy people, they didn't think that Jesus had it together either. They totally misunderstood Jesus. When Jesus is starting to gain some notoriety and fame, it says when his family heard what was happening, they tried to take him away. And his family, people like James, who wrote one of the books in the New Testament, says about Jesus, he's out of his mind. He's a mess. He's crazy. Jesus' family was messy. He knows what it's like to be a part of a dysfunctional family. He knows what it's like to be misunderstood by his family. He knows what the messes are like. And so when he tells this final story about partying with messy people and loving lost people, wherever they might be, he tells a story about a messy family. You heard the back part of it in the Bible reading for today. Here's how Jesus opens it. It says, a man had two sons. The younger son told his father, I want my share of your estate now before you die. Now, Jesus is talking to a diverse group of people. There's the tax collectors. There's the notorious sinners. There's the Pharisees. There's the teachers of religious law. But all of them would have had the exact same response to what Jesus just said right here. He just said that a young Jewish man in the ancient Jewish community had the audacity to walk up to his father and say, give me my inheritance now. In those days, you didn't get your inheritance until your parents were dead. For this son to walk up to his father and say, I'd like my inheritance now, what he's telling his father is, let's pretend like you're dead. I don't want you, I want your stuff. What a mess. He's so lost. It's so obvious, right? He doesn't want his father, he just wants his father's stuff. And so he takes it by disobeying his father. Everybody listening to Jesus, they had to have known where the story was going. This boy is going to suffer, right? And yeah, he suffers. He spends his money on all sorts of terrible things, and he finds himself in a pig pen, seeing what the pigs are eating and thinking, oh my goodness, maybe that looks good to eat because I'm starving. But eventually, it tells us that he finally comes to his senses, and he said to himself, at home, even the hired servants have had food enough to spare, and here I am dying of hunger. Then he goes on and he says, like, hey, I'll go home and I'll apologize to my father. But what is his gut reaction? What's the thing that first makes him think, you know what, I'm going to go home? It says he finally comes to his senses. Is it that he fully understands what he's done to his dad? Is it that he totally understands how brokenhearted his father must be? Is it that he understands that he's completely embarrassed his family and their reputation and their community? No, it's he wants some food. He's hungry. I mean, he's starting to turn around, but he's not getting it yet. He still doesn't really want the Father. He wants the Father's stuff. And what would you do if you saw a boy like this coming home? What would your gut reaction be? I think for most of us, it would be, this better be good. Growing up in our family, curfew was a big deal. Curfew was a big deal, especially on Saturday night, because my dad would get up here and he'd preach in front of thousands of you. And you did not want to be the kid in our family that he would look over and be like, I'm a little tired today. Because you kept me up, right? He didn't actually do that, but it was a big deal to come home on time. Now, I certainly had my issues with curfew, but my brother definitely had his issues with curfew today, and he's not here, so let's talk about him. Hi, John, I know you're watching online. All right. So John, he came home after midnight, right? And when John would come home after midnight, because I knew what it was like to come home after midnight and to, you know, to be in trouble for that, I would make a scene. Oh, and where have you been? And I'd get loud. And if my parents didn't wake up, I'd like stand right next to their door. I can't believe it is 1:30 in the morning. My dad would finally walk out of the room and was like, what is going on? What is going on here? And I'm like, Reverend, your son. He needs the wrath of God. Let's not enable this sinner anymore. My dad was like, Danny, go to sleep. I got to preach. Right? How would you respond? This father, he responds shockingly. He says, well, when he sees his son coming from a long way away, his father did not know when his son would be coming home. It's not like he's sitting on the porch. He's like, ah, yes, today's the day. He's coming home. It must have meant that in Jesus' mind, as he's telling this story, his father would have sat there every single day. Maybe today. Maybe today. Maybe today. I know he showed me he wants nothing to do with me, but maybe today. When the father saw his son coming from a long ways away, filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son. He embraced him. He kissed him. The son tries to give his speech, but the father interrupts him, and he says, quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet. We read this and we're like, you're enabling him. I mean, I know that you love your kid, but my goodness, you can't treat a sinner like that. He's a mess. Fix him, correct him, make him figure it out. But anybody who really loves their kid, can you help yourself? When you see your kid and they can't carry their baggage, what do you do? My wife and I, we have a 7-month-old daughter, and her name's Lainey. She's the sweetest, she's the cutest, she smiles at you, she laughs at you, she burps at you, she does all the fun baby stuff. And this past week, she went on her first plane rides, and we thought that'd be fun, too. We learned. You know, I'm thinking to myself, this will be easy. I mean, how much do you have to pack for a 15-pound baby? I'll show you how much you have to pack for a 15-pound baby. The only thing in this photo that belongs to me are the clothes on my back and these 2 water bottles. Everything else is for Lainey, a 15-pound baby. I mean, this right here is a stroller bag. Strollers are really convenient until you have to carry them. And this stroller bag, they advertise it. Oh, it's so amazing. It'll help you so much. It is gift wrap from hell. It's awful. It's not fun. I'm sitting there in a jam-packed gate, taking up the space equivalent to a 1-bedroom apartment. I'm disassembling the stroller. I'm trying to put it in the bag. I'm sweating. I'm stressed. I'm nervous. I'm surrounded by people who are waiting for their delayed flights. What could go wrong? They're looking at me. Lainey's starting to cry. They're like, oh, it's so sweet. I'm like, oh, best thing that ever happened to me. Right? Oh, my goodness. You know, of course, you. Why do you do this? This is why you do this. Easiest load I've ever had to carry. I'd carry more than I can carry to be with her. Sure, I just want her home. I just want her to be with us. Abby and I, we would do anything for Lainey to know. You belong with us. We love you. We are your home. And when Jesus is telling a story about a messy family, and messy people like me and like you, he's telling a story that is fathered by his good father. His perfect father. And what is he telling us in this story? No matter your baggage, and even if it's left completely sprawled out over the airport gate, he will take it. Your baggage doesn't have to be perfected and zipped up before you come to him. He's got the cosmic shoulders that bear the weight of the universe. You don't think he can carry your baggage? Just come home. God just wants you home. And Christians, are we representing the kingdom of God like that? Do we represent the kingdom of God as a home where we chase people to bring them back to show them we love you, we care about you, begging them, pleading with them, running to them, please, you belong here. I know life is a mess. We can be in the mess together. I'm in it with you. Is this how we're portraying Christianity? Or do we sometimes tell people, well, you're lost, you're a mess, figure it out, and eventually you'll come back. And if we do that, we'll lose them. There's a kind of scary stat out there. It's 66% of young adults who attended church in high school stopped attending as young adults. This is from Lifeway Research. Now, it's also worth noting that if you bring your kids to church throughout high school, there is a way higher chance that they will continue to go to church in adulthood. But especially in those years right after they move out to go to college or they're living on their own for the first time, 66% of them stop attending as young adults. And the reason for this in the surveys for why students or why young adults stop going to church in their first years outside of the home is actually really simple. May not be what you think that it is. It's not, oh, they're a bunch of hypocrites. It's not, oh, it's so boring. It's, I moved. I moved and I'm figuring out so many different things. I'm figuring out my new class schedule. I'm figuring out my work schedule. I'm figuring out this new team. I'm figuring out this new club. I'm figuring out this new friend circle. I'm figuring out these new relationships. I'm trying to figure everything out, and I got to figure out church. What if church was the place where they knew I don't have to figure it out? What would it look like for us not to wait for people to figure it out before they come back, but that we would pursue them and love them and invite them home to a party that was made for them? I am so proud to be a part of a church and to pastor at a place where you believe this is important. Because yes, 66% of young adults, they stop attending church after they move out, but what we're seeing at Hope Ames is remarkable. Can I brag about Hope Ames for a second? We have a congregation that has about 600 people on a Sunday morning. And there's about 400 college students who are a part of Kairos. A congregation of 600 people taking on a group of 400 college students that have no money is a really big burden. It's super messy. And this congregation, they welcome them. We have multiple families that welcome small groups of college students into their homes every single week. If you've been into a dorm room lately, do you know that smell? And these people at Hope Ames are like, just come on over. We love you. We want this to be home for you. And it started because there's a group of volunteers there who wanted that to happen. And it's helped out because you, this congregation, this church, sees that this is important. I mean, my goodness, look at VBS, look at Hope Kids, look at Power Life, look at Ignition, look at Kairos, look at Revive, our young adults ministry. It's incredible what God is doing through you people who have decided we don't have to wait for them to figure it out in order to be a part of our group. You've opened the doors. People here at West Des Moines, we have people who drive up from West Des Moines to come up to Kairos in Ames so that they can just love these kids. I cannot wait for this to start again this year. You heard about it in Hope 360. It's happening at Iowa City, which we're really excited for them. If there's any proof that like the gospel unites us, Hawkeyes, Cyclones, we're together. It's incredible, right? It's all starting up again. August 27th, we have our big connection night on campus. And then August 28th, we have our big kickoff service on campus called Kairos of the Campanile. We can't wait. And every single week, hundreds of students flood our building on Lincoln Way. It's an incredible sight to see. And it's because the church has realized that we don't have to control you and make you figure it out. Instead, we get to love you. And we know this. Love is greater than control, because control at its best can maintain something. You can hold on to it for as long as you're living, but love revives. Love multiplies. Love renews. It's this incredible gift. It's the most amazing thing that we can be a part of. Every single church in the world, they say, oh, we'd love to have young people, right? All Christians, I'd love to see the generations come together. It's great, you know, they're young, they're creative, they're energetic, but they're messy. And then all of a sudden you start to realize you don't like their music, you don't like their clothes, you don't like how they talk, they don't know what a landline is, they're a mess. Everybody wants young people around until we see how messy they are. But thank you, Hope. You've created a space where they see, I belong here. And your love is multiplying. It is multiplying. It's incredible. Let me show you a quick story about this. So this is a picture of Adam. Adam was baptized at Hope Ames this past year. He's one of our Kairos students who graduated in May. We're super proud of him. Adam wanted to be baptized at the Hope Ames service on Sunday morning because he wanted to be baptized in front of the congregation that loved him and welcomed him and supported him. And what was really cool about his baptism is that standing in the back of his baptism was his Kairos small group, the group that met every single week. And then once he was done getting baptized, he goes backstage, he dries off, and then he leaves the auditorium. His friends, his small group, they leave the auditorium, but they're not leaving church. Instead, they walked over to the gym where we have our Hope Kids program in Ames, and they led Hope Kids for the morning. And they did it all year long because they know what it's like for someone who's older than them to not have to wait for them to figure it out, for them to be a part of their group. This love, it renews, it revives, and it multiplies. And if we don't do this, we're going to miss it. We're going to miss sites like this. We're going to miss the beauty. Sure, we'll avoid the mess, but we will miss the beauty. We'll miss the party. There's a character in this story that Jesus tells who's missing the party. It's the part of the story that's not as fun to talk about, but it's the part of the story that people, especially Christians who have been Christians for a long time, we have to pay close attention to. See, Jesus, he talks about an older brother, and this older brother was in the fields working. A hired hand comes up to him, he says, your brother's back. Your father has killed the fattened calf. We're celebrating because of his safe return. But the older brother was angry and wouldn't go in. The text continues, and it tells us this. It says that all these years I've slaved for you, the older son says to his father. And all that time you never gave me even one young goat. When this son of yours comes back after squandering your money, you celebrate by killing the fattened calf. What's he really mad about? Why is he missing out on the party? He's not really missing out on the party because his younger brother's done a bunch of bad stuff. No, it says he's missing out on the party because of all that he's done. He's not missing out on the party because of his brother's disobedience. He's missing out on the party because of his obedience, because of his own righteousness, because of what he's done. And it's really interesting. The son, who's the youngest, it's obvious he's lost, right? We all know that guy looks lost. And you know if you're lost like that. You wake up from a bender. Your life is a mess. Your head hurts. Your relationships are ruined. Things are chaotic. It's crazy. But this older brother is lost too. Because he doesn't want the father either. He just wants the father's stuff. And he didn't want the father's stuff and get it by being disobedient. He took the father's stuff, wanted to have the father's stuff by being obedient. It's interesting, isn't it? As Christians, we're vulnerable to this. You don't necessarily know it, but all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're like, I'm angry at everyone. I'm angry about everything. I'm angry when things go well for other people. I'm angry when God's not giving me what I want. I've invested in my faith, God. Why is my life not cleaned up yet? What's going on here? And we have to ask ourselves this question. The question that the sons could have asked. Do I want God or God's stuff? Do you want God or God's stuff? The reality is, if you just want God's stuff, for one, it's disingenuous, but way more importantly than that, you're going to miss the best part of faith. You'll miss the transformation. And it's not going to be because of your disobedience. It's going to be because you depend on yourself. See, because of all the good things that you're doing, and you believe that God needs to reward you for it. Because economically speaking, this is how you get rewarded in the world. You do good things, but God's love isn't economic, it's extravagant. It's extravagant and it overflows. But if we're so focused on our righteousness will block our view of Jesus. And it's always all about Jesus. When Jesus talks about these stories, and even when he's talking about messy people, he's always talking about himself. Like, the story is always coming back to himself. Do you know that? Do you notice that about Jesus? He always talks about himself. And so as he's telling this story about a messy family, he's talking about his own family. Where is he in this story? Well, everybody who heard this story would have heard Jesus talk about a younger son and an older son, but they would have been confused about the older son. Because in the ancient Jewish culture, the older son had a responsibility. The older son got the biggest portion of the inheritance because they would take on the responsibility for the rest of their lives to hold the family together. No matter how messy it got, they would hold the family together. That was their job. That was their commitment. And this younger brother desperately needed a true older brother like that. He desperately needed a true older brother who would go to his father the minute that the younger brother walked off and said, I don't care what it costs me. I don't care how many towns I have to cross. I will go and I will find him and I will bring him home. He belongs with us. I'll go. I don't care what it takes. He desperately needed a true older brother like that, but instead he got a Pharisee. He got a strict Pharisee for an older brother. But the really cool thing is you and I, as we read the story, we don't get a Pharisee. We get a true older brother. Because who is Jesus in this story? What's Jesus telling us about himself? Who is he? He's the Son of God. He's the Son of the Father. Everything the Father has belongs to Jesus. And when he sees messy, broken, lost people, sometimes lost because we just ended up there and we can't help ourselves, we make mistakes as humans. Other times lost because someone's used us, spent us, abused us, and forgotten us. Jesus goes to his father and says, I don't care about the cost. I will cross the universe to find them, to bring them home, to show them that this party I've been planning for eternity is made for them. So what did he do? He crossed the universe. And for the younger son to put on the family robe, Jesus is stripped. For the younger son to put on the royal ring, Jesus wears a crown of thorns. For the younger son to wear sandals, Jesus' feet are nailed to a cross. For the younger son to eat and taste the finest wine and meat of a perfect party, Jesus on the cross cries out, I'm thirsty. He's the true older brother. He disregards the cost. He crosses the universe to show you who he really is. And it's actually not metaphorical. Because you remember Jesus' messy little brother, James? In 1 Corinthians, the Apostle Paul is talking about all these groups of people who see the risen Jesus. He's risen from the dead, and there's all these groups. But then he pauses for a moment, and he says this. He says, there's one person. Then he was seen by James, the messy little brother. He's literally the true older brother. He's telling a story about his own messy, dysfunctional family that he would cross the universe to save, to bring home, to join in their mess because he's not afraid of it. And when he talks about his family, he's talking about you. He's talking about us. Whatever Jesus felt for James, whatever Jesus saw in James, he feels the same for you. He sees the same in you. You can know this as a child of God. Jesus is your big brother. He's your big brother who disregards the cost. He crosses the universe. He's not economic about it. He extravagantly loves you. Pours out all of his love for you. To do what? To invite you home. To bring you to a party. It could never be taken away. A party you don't have to figure it out to be a part of. One that'll totally transform you and change you in the lives of people around you. But today, you get to show up as you are. You don't have to get your baggage zipped up. He can carry it. He is your true older brother who has crossed the universe to bring you back home. This is the party that's worth living for. What else is there worth living for other than this party? There's lots of other good parties. But if you're living for any party that's not God, it might be a good one, but it's not home. He's your home. He's your big brother. He's disregarded the cost. He's crossed the universe to chase after you, to love you, to bring you home. So come on, bring your mess and invite every messy person around you. And let's party with Jesus. Amen.